welcome. My name is Julian Schlossberg, and the name of our show is Movie Talk. We're back for part two of my talk with Estelle Parsons. She's won the Academy Award, and she's been around for 9 decades. That's right, 9 decades, and she has a lot to say. Now tell me, Estelle, what do you expect from a director? What are you looking for when you go into a play, a movie? What is it that you're hoping this director will give you?
I think the word is respect. I mean, I don't know how it is today, but they want immediate results. You don't get immediate, they don't understand acting. So they want a finished performance. And that's crazy because, I mean, if you're working on the stage, it's different in films. In films, you learn your lines and you come out and you do it. So it's an immediate performance. But when you're working on the stage, you know, it's a whole ball of wax and it takes a long time. And the longer the rehearsal period, the better. I mean, 1 or 2 weeks. I used to go in summer stock too, and you'd have a week's rehearsal. You'd barely know what you were talking about because you would have shoved all these words into your head. I remember that so well because my father was dying while I was doing all this stuff in summer stock, remembering these ridiculous lines. But
Did you ever get, was there ever a role that you feel you didn't conquer? Was there ever a play or film where you said, I just didn't get it? Because often actors at the end of a run will say, I finally got it. I finally understand it. Did you ever have a role like that? That was that difficult for you?
Isn't that interesting that people say that to you? Because it does happen.
Yes.
You have everything, but you don't have everything. You never know.
Now, you spent over 20 years at the Actors Studio with Lee Strasberg.
And, oh, yeah. 20 years? Isn't it more like 40?
No, with him. With him.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
No, I think you've been there for 40, yes. But
he there for 40? No.
I don't know. He was there from the very beginning. I know that.
What?
I say he was there from the very beginning, obviously, when Kazan and Bobby
and
Lewis.
Cheryl and Kazan.
And, yeah,
they
Bobby
were the
Lewis.
Threesome, and then you had, Bobby Lewis. No, they split off. They split off, you know, because Bobby wanted to do, didn't want to do plays. And Kazan wanted to do plays. So they split off, and Kazan came then with Sundown Beach with Julie Harris. I was still working in summer stock then. But they had a big split off because one of them wanted to just keep, I don't know, doing what we were doing. And I think that was Bobby Lewis. Now I got to ask my friend about that, but I'm quite sure.
I think you're right.
That was the big split, that one of them wanted to do plays and the other one didn't.
Now, you were the artistic director from 1998 to 2003. What did that job entail?
Where? At the Actors Studio?
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about now, the Actors?
I am.
Oh, it didn't entail anything. Stupid little job to call yourself the artistic director then. You know, it's only a place where you have auditions. People who want to belong there audition. And if they pass the audition, they have a preliminary. If they pass that, they go to a final. And then they have a final. So then they've done 2 auditions. And then they get to sit in the Actors Studio Tuesdays and Friday mornings from 11 to 1 and watch their fellow membership work up there, act various things, whatever anybody wants to act. And then you sit and talk about what they acted.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought it might have something to do with bringing in properties for actors to work with, but it doesn't, I gather.
Bring in material?
Yeah.
No.
No.
No. Oh. What did you have in mind?
Well, that's what I had in mind as a possibility of part of the artistic directing job, but it obviously isn't. So the hell with my mind.
Well, no, it's just what I just described. People the only thing I can think about, I was in private classes with Lee Strasberg. I was on Today Show, and I got another person that was also a writer on the Today Show, and I gave her a script and said, will you read this? It was Our Town, believe it or not. And it was a soda fountain scene. So I said, will you read this with me? Because I've got an audition for Elia Kazan to go to the actor studio. I didn't know what it was, but I just knew that I wasn't interested in TV. That was always my money job, you know. That was never something I want, and I was getting extremely successful. So it wasn't that. It was just that I wanted to be on the stage. And that's why I don't care about movies. But you have to do them. I put my kids through school by being in the movies, you know. But what I want to do is step out there at 8, 10, you know, and thrill people for an hour or two. It's a huge challenge, whether you're a 6 or 600. It's a huge challenge to walk out in front of, well, 99, no, 299 is about the smallest. Well, you know, I have a friend who's working in a 99-seat theater now, but that's something new down on 42nd Street. That's just ridiculous. But 299 was about the smallest you worked in, and then you worked up to 5,000, actually. But, you know, that's, to me, the most exciting thing in the world, to have some person to create, to step out and create that person in front of all these people. I wavered between acting and politics, you see, but it was all about this relationship with other people, a relationship with a crowd. Like I used to go out in political campaigns, we'd go out in a sound truck, you know? And you'd be in the back of the sound truck hollering about politics and that kind of stuff, and carrying a torch around with you, which had burned up my whole coat one night. Anyway, but those were my interests, politics and acting.
Well, I wanted to ask you, you were starting to say that your friend from the Today Show, you went over to the actor's studio. Were you going to do a scene together? Is that why?
Yeah. I was going to audition for Kazan.
Was it Our Town? Was it
Our
Town?
So I did. I took my friend. She read the other part from Our Town. I read the part of the mother, Mrs. Gibbs, I think her name was. It's a beautiful play. It's such a beautiful play. They did a revival of it not long ago. Anyway, I did that with her, and she was just reading off the book, of course. Maybe I was too. But anyway, Gadge said to me, "Why you need to go to, I think it's 253 West 86th Street or something, with that big building there, you know, that where Lee lived." So I went there, and went to his apartment, and there's a chair outside the front door. He says, "Sit down in the chair." So I sat down in the chair, and he went back in his apartment, and then when he finished whatever he was doing, he came out and said, "Hi, I'm Lee Strasberg." Shook my hand, said, "So you want to act?" And I burst out crying. It was good. I've at least had one moment in my life where something happened spontaneously. And I cried and cried and cried. And then he took me into his private classes.
So let's talk in terms of, oh, I wanted to say, oh, I know. I wanted to tell you that I saw the revival of Our Town with Paul Newman. And it was, he really did a beautiful job. But that segues me into Rachel, his first movie as a director. Yeah. And you're working on it. How was that? How was he as a director on his first movie?
We had a good time. We rehearsed for 2 weeks. He had a set built. And we rehearsed the play for 2 weeks before we shot it, which was a really funny experience. And then we shot it. Because, you know, usually you do movies, and I had been doing a couple of two or three before then, where you just learn the lines and you get up and you act. And then here we were. We had this whole set built. We rehearsed and rehearsed and rehearsed. And I remember thinking when I was making my entrance, I had this long walk down a driveway to go to visit Joanne, who was not my best friend. I was a lesbian who was in love with her. So I remember thinking, this is so funny. We rehearsed this 2 weeks, and here we are now shooting it. It's not like shooting a movie, you know?
Yeah, this is. I liked Joanne. I thought she was a very warm and a charming woman. I hope you did too.
Oh yeah, she was terrific. Jeez. They were both terrific. They were really terrific people, both of them.
I'd been going to the theater.
An experience that I was really. She came in one morning and we had this scene to do. I forget it was. She said, I'm going to play this scene with my mouth now. I'm going to move my mouth. And she showed me how she was going to move her mouth to play this scene. And I was so fucking mad. I thought, geez, did I get out of bed to watch her move her mouth? But she's calling. It was really funny. We had a long relationship with them, and they were wonderful. Wonderful people, both of them. Wonderful.
Estelle, can you fix the will you fix the computer? You're down to that's great. I've seen some of the great performances of all time on Broadway, but I'm going to tell it to you. I don't care if it embarrasses you or not. One of the greatest evenings of my life was watching you do Mrs. Margarita's Way. Yeah. I have to tell you. I mean, I've seen Schofield with Man for All Seasons. I saw Paul Muni do Inherit the Wind. But I'm telling you, you're in the magic circle, Estelle. That is, if there's such a thing as the most courageous kind of acting, that's, and we have to explain for those who didn't see it about the play, if you would do it, and I'll jump in if you want. But what it's about and what you had to do eight times a week.
Yeah, Margarita's Way. It's 30 pages, single space. And it's about, it takes place in, it can actually take place in front of curtains with one of those great big movable blackboards. We actually, Santo Loquasto built a set for our production of it, but it's really written to be just done like that in front of curtains with one of those, you know, roll-in boards. Anyway, it's a wonderful piece. It's written by a Brazilian guy who was kind of an enfant terrible. His father was head of the arts and letters in Brazil, and he everybody disliked him because he was such a fiery kid. And anyway, everybody had rejected his play. This is such a long story. You don't even. I forget who her name, an actress. She'd had a set built that would go in a plane so she could do his play, Miss Margarita's Way, all around the country. And she could fly in this plane with the set and set it up and do it. This was a whole big plan she had, right?
Yes.
And then Bill Ball, who ran the company in San Francisco at the time and was the producer of all this, wouldn't give her enough rehearsal time to properly learn the play. He wanted to give her a regular, you know, it's usually about 3.5 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 at a big stretch if it's a long, long thing. But this was like 30 pages, single space, one person. How hard could it be? But anyway, Bill Ball realized it needed a long time. It needed 7 weeks rehearsal. And he did not have the money for 7 weeks rehearsal. And consequently, her plan blew up in her face. So then Ellen Burstyn was supposed to do this thing, and she went around Broadway looking for theaters that would be right for it. And finally, they got so tired of this kid, who was very flamboyant and smart as a whip, of course, but very hard to get along with. So along came me with a French guy who was interviewing me for a newspaper in Paris. And I said, I'm tired of walking on Broadway. George Rose and I were doing Pirates of Penzance with Kevin, you know, Kevin. So we were doing that, and we were tired of the Broadway audiences. After television started, Broadway audiences changed. They no longer came to the theater to participate. They came to the theater to watch. And so George and I was maybe a little older than me, maybe not. But we were always talking about how audiences do not take part. Theater audiences were not taking part in the play. They were watching it like you'd watch a TV show. So we were both very upset about this state of affairs. And along came this kid with this Miss Margarita's Way, which is... So I was telling this guy from Paris about how I was upset with these audiences. And he said, well, I've got this play that is done direct to the audience. And I said, wow. So next thing I know, he comes along, hands me this play. It's in French, which fortunately I could read. And I thought, this is fantastic. So I took it to Joe Papp, because at that time, Joe Papp would do anything I brought to him. I brought to him Dario Fo's pieces, which we, you know, were named female parts in London, but our production was called Orgasmo, Adulter Escape for the Duke. 22 short plays done by Dario Fo and his wife. So working for Joe Papp anyway. And so this kid and this play came along. And Joe Papp said after, you know, in it 2 weeks in, he came and saw, he said, you need a lot more time for this play. You know, you can't just put this play up like you put a play up 3.5 weeks and so on. He said, you just can't do that. I'm going to leave you here in this theater. It was down there at the Public. He said, I'm leaving you in this theater and you just keep working on it. And when it's ready, we'll open it. So that's what we did. And of course, it was an enormous success. And for me, it was great fun because I actually went all over the world with it, including Australia, Turkey, and all over this country. So it was great.
Well, number one, it shows how great a producer Joe Papp was to recognize it, to realize what had to be done.
Right.
But we have to let the audience know who didn't see it that you're up there as almost Mussolini. I mean, you are one tough woman in charge of this class as the audience.
Yeah.
It is so exciting. It is so riveting. But
yeah.
people are yelling out. I mean, this is not like any theater I've ever seen. And you handled it so amazing, Estelle.
Yeah, I loved it. It was just meant for me because I loved that kind of thing. I loved when they got in the way. And once I came out for the second act and there were 32 people standing on the stage. I mean, that was the biggest experience I ever had. They're always bringing things, you know, they brought crabs in a bird cage one time. And another guy came up with a paper bag, and, you know, the energy in the room was such that I knew when he came up on that stage, that paper bag, there was Kotex in that.
Yeah.
That's how high the energy in that room was.
Yes.
You know, with all the audience sitting there.
The night that I saw it, they threw a couple of paper planes. But you were so, it seemed to me. Now, maybe you had your set rapport at certain things, but so much of that was so brilliant and exciting at the moment. I mean,
yeah.
I've never seen theater like that. And I just must say, it must have been, one of your highlights of your career.
Oh, of course, it was the most important thing in my life. And I went all over the world with it. But it was such fun for me. I loved it. Because, you know, I had a nightclub career. I was singing with bands. I just wasn't a person who was up on the stage and the audience was out there, which I'll tell you the story about Madeleine Renaud, I think, in Paris. She was doing this play in Paris. And the audience started reacting to her like they do. They're supposed to. But this was the beginning, and he laid down flat on the stage and said, I can't continue in Paris. So I was prepared for what it was going to be like, and I really loved it. I loved every moment of it.
Well, all I could tell you is no audience ever won with Miss Margarita. I think you probably took them all on every night, 8 times a week.
And do you know, I still get letters from people. Last month, I got a letter from a woman, and she said, we were in row 13 for your performance on such and such a night. And she said, I can still remember it. And she went on about how she had come with her boyfriend, and they just got engaged and all kinds of stuff. Can you believe it? It was a great experience. I really loved it. Everybody doesn't love it. You see, Madeleine Renaud did not love it. She wanted to be up there acting. And not being trading insults with 500 or 1,000 people or however big theater you got yourself into. But I just loved every minute of it.
I could see it. I could see that you would. And boy, were you in charge. You were in charge. And it was just great to see. Now let's talk.
You know, you can look at that at, you know, where it is. At that time, it was just when Lincoln Center was beginning to tape Broadway shows.
Yes.
So I have a friend, and I think 2 months ago, he went to Lincoln Center, and sure enough, he could see that show.
Yeah.
You know, a new friend of mine who had heard me talk about it, because I've got a big poster from it here and everything. And they had film. So if you want to look at it, you can go there and look at it.
I do want to see it. And I've been to the Lincoln Center Library. I love it because they have some of the great shows. Thank goodness, tapes.
Oh, yes, they do. They do. They do. But go and look at that.
I will. I will. Yeah. Okay, let's go to something that probably, how crazy all the years you've worked, probably people know, the public probably knows you the best from being Roseanne's mom.
Roseanne's mother.
But she was quite a force.
She was amazing.
I did a wonderful show with her recently, Estelle. And
Recently, really?
Yeah, within the last year, yeah. And it was really terrific because she's outspoken, she's intelligent, she has taste, and it's so interesting, too, that the two of you could have gone either way. Either you became close or you could have been lump. And fortunately, you became close.
She lives in Hawaii now?
I think so. But I was not talking to her in Hawaii. But I think she does live there now, yeah. But she thought, of course, well of you. And I know you think well of her. Was it a good set, a nice set to work on?
Oh, I was always happy. I had an arrangement with them because I live in New York, you know, and at the time I had a young child. I had an arrangement with them that they'd call and say, can you come next week? And I'd say yes or no. So it was wonderful to be with them. Yeah, I love her and I love Laurie, but she was particularly wonderful. I mean, she had a brain for the stuff she did, which is stand-up put into a series.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
I sure do.
So it was a pleasure to be on a set with her because she'd be all doing something. And then she'd say, we should try blah, 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 blah. And she was always right about it. Actors who would work with her, you know, like me, John Randolph, wasn't that his name?
Yeah, and there was, and George Clooney, I think. Wasn't George Clooney involved too?
Remember that he was ever involved, but.
Oh, yeah, he was definitely. Forever. He was definitely on the show.
Red Buttons was my boyfriend.
Oh,
I remember that.
Never had a dinner.
About how everybody in Beverly Hills had a Cadillac and they always broke down on Sunset Boulevard. But that was Red Buttons?
Well, that's what I mean, after all, he had a nightclub at where he said, never had a dinner. Some people just never had a dinner. And it was very, very funny bit. He said, what was the thing? Eve said to Adam in the Garden of Eden, does this fig leaf make me look fat?
Funny.
Tell me a little bit, if you would, about Barbara Streisand. You did for Pete's Sake.
Oh, yeah.
Was that something that you enjoyed at all?
Oh, well, I had a very small part. I didn't know much about it. Yeah, I had a very good relationship with her.
Yeah. She also, like Roseanne and like yourself, cares about the work. The people who really care about the work are the ones that, of course, I respect the most. And she certainly was that. And she and I spent a lot of time together. And when she met Jimmy Brolin, her whole life changed, which was great for her. It was nice.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So let's talk, if we can, in terms of We Bombed in New Haven. This is a interesting thing to talk about quickly. Joseph Heller had written Catch-22. It's this gigantic bestseller, and he decides to do a play. His first play is called We Bombed in New Haven, and you're working with Stacy Keach. You're working with Ron Liebman in Yale, I think the Yale Repertory Theater.
But who directed it?
I forgot. I do know. Larry Arick? Was it Larry?
Larry Arick, yeah.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about that, if you would.
I couldn't tell you much about that.
Okay.
I was in New Haven doing another play there, Broadway Theater, at the time. And then I went over there for that with Larry Arick, because I liked doing things like that. It was kind of freewheeling. Ken Howard was in it. The only person I remember was in it was Ken Howard, actually.
That was one tall actor.
He was very good. He became head of our union.
Yes.
Know what happened to him.
The play was going to go to New York, but I think you had already signed on to...
Don't bring this up. This is a sore spot.
I'm sorry.
Because, I didn't want to do it in New York. I forget. I think my kid was very small. I don't know. I had a lot of reasons why I didn't want to work. All my life, in that earlier half of my life, I might say, I was allergic to working. If I could get out of a job, I wouldn't do it. I mean, I just was allergic to working. So my answer to almost everything to everybody was no.
Well, I think
that was one thing. And then they wanted to come to New York. And I said, no, I'm not going to New York with that play. Diana Sands did it. And I said, I'm not going to New York. We bombed in New Haven. And no, I did that at the Yale Rep because I had always wanted to be with a rep company. And Bob Brustein was starting this rep company at Yale. He then went up to Cambridge, you know, and I guess they're still there with that other woman. I forget her name now. Diane Paulus.
Well, I thought, I'll tell you what I read, Estelle. I read that you had signed to do a Tennessee Williams play, Seven Descents. So that was why.
Terrible play. And it was, everybody knew it was a terrible play, but I had agreed to do that. And so I did that.
And that was a play that I know out of town, they were cutting and cutting and finally took about 45 minutes out of the original version.
The Seven Descents of Myrtle. It turned out to be. First, it was named Kingdom of Earth. That was David Merrick. Remember him?
Oh, yes. We certainly do. But he did let you go to the Academy Award. He let you go.
He didn't let me go. They made me go. I said, what the fuck do I care about that? I'm not going to miss a performance. He said, listen, I'm putting your understudy on. If you don't go, you can sit home that night, but I am not putting you in this play, and I want you to go, and here's the ticket.
Well, I'm glad you went, and I liked. And listen, Estelle, your acceptance speech, you lived up to your parents' ideas. It was quiet, it was dignified, it was short, and you opened with a great line. You said, this is really heavy.
Right.
So tell me a little bit about what you feel is going on right now on Broadway. I mean, as far as I try to sit through the Tonys, and it was tough for me to watch. The theater that I grew up with is gone most of the time, and I find it a little discouraging. I have to confess.
I don't know what you mean that theater you grew up with is gone.
Well, I grew up with Arthur Miller and Eugene O'Neill and Tennessee Williams. And
You've got Arthur Miller. He's up there in Death of a Salesman. You've got Laurie and Nathan Lane up there.
That's right. But it's not the same Death of a Salesman I know.
No.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your directing career. And you... how did the whole thing with Salome, with Al Pacino and Marissa, how did that all come to pass? Did it start at the Actors Studio?
Well, of course, I knew Al from the studio. And then he was fishing around for something to work on the stage. And I remember that I thought, well, I'm going to tell him about this play. What play was it? Salome. I'd been looking at it, and I said, I'm going to tell him about that. Anyway, that's how it all happened. Robert Fox, who unfortunately I heard on the Tonys, had died. That's too bad. He was a great guy. He was a London producer, and well, he was a friend of ours. I worked
with him. I brought over Vita in Virginia with him. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the same period as...
When you did,
yes, it was the same period of time.
Well, was it your idea to make it a minimalistic kind of a play? Was that, as the director, did you want to do it that way?
No, I don't think so. I didn't have it minimal. I didn't have a minimum or not. I didn't particularly want a set, but I didn't want to do it Al's way. And then Al came in and said, no, 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 I want to do it this way. So we did it his way. If you work with Al, you know, you just have to understand about working with Al, that Al is going to go where he's going to go and do what he has to do. And I was cool with that. I didn't care. You know, he and Robert said, will you direct this thing? And I think they looking for a lot of pushback from me. And I knew the situation so well, so I said, sure, I'll direct it. Why not? So well, we all went to work on it. You know, then I'd say, here, now let's do this. And Al came in one day and he said, I'm going to rearrange this whole thing now. It's not going to look anything like this. It's going to be this, and it's going to be this, and it's going to be that. And I think they were expecting me to, you know, either quit or say, burst into tears or maybe something. I said, oh, okay, let's try it that way. What? So, you know, I knew what I was up against isn't a good phrase, probably. But I knew the situation. I loved Al. I have a good deal of respect for him always, for everything he has accomplished for himself and everybody else. And he was very close to Lee, as I was very close to Lee. So everything was fine.
Well, I like
David Strathern played, you know, the guy who has his head cut off for Salome. That was Marissa Tomei. And we had a good time.
Yeah, John the Baptist lost his head.
Yeah, right. He lost his head.
Now
looking at him down there.
But you go out a few years later to L.A. and
yeah.
You do it again. But there's a young girl that comes in to cast. You cast for Marissa did not go to L.A. and you found this young woman, I think, right?
Who was that?
Jessica Chastain.
Oh, Jessica, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
And she was quite a discovery. I think that was her very first job.
Yeah, you know, she came from, you know, Rosemary Tischler?
No.
She worked for Joe. She's a casting director.
Yes.
But she said to me, we were all friends from the public, you know.
And, yes.
And Nancy Piccioni, we were all friends hanging around New York, you know, and at the public too. So she told me about Jessica. And then, I said to Robert Fox, listen to Al, there is this girl that I want you to look at. So we got her in. I think it was at the studio that we brought her. We got her in. And she started to do a little bit. And they had to do the whole darn play. And she just hove to, ended the whole darn play.
Wow.
So that was good. And that was the beginning of her career. And then we were all at the film festival. Was that in Rome? I think so. Out in my life. I wonder what I was spending so much time in Italy for, and that was the reason.
Well, now, see, if nothing else comes from this interview, at least we've got that.
No, where did she go? Where is Jessica Chastain now?
Well, I saw her do The Heiress on Broadway. She was terrific in The Heiress.
Yeah, she's a wonderful actress.
Yeah, and I guess she's
that's
doing...
That's a long time ago.
Well, you know, that's the sentence that I say all the time now.
Yeah.
Anyhow, Estelle, you've been terrific, and I really thank you. I know it's not the most exciting way to spend the afternoon.
It's a perfectly good way to spend, at my point of being 98. It's a good way to spend the day thinking about all the wonderful life I've had, which I have had a wonderful life. Following my own path. I think that's the secret. You've got to do what, you know, you've got to do what you feel to do.
Well, you know, we know
not
that
intellectually, but, you know.
Well, we know that Shakespeare had the great line for Polonius, to thine own self be true.
That's it. I gave a commencement speech, and that was my principal line in it.
Really? Really?
Yeah.
Well, I thank you so much. It's been a pleasure doing it. I knew I would have a good time, and I did.
I'm glad, because I did too. So that's good.
Thanks for joining us on Julian Schlossberg's Movie Talk. Remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Adavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world with content production that powers your growth. Podcasts, audiobooks, and everything in between. Learn more at adavita.com.
Produced by Adavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.